Man in His Time by Brian Aldiss. Part 2. Future time with its uses and abuses. The men were looking at their watches. Westermarck transferred his gaze to the gravel to say, "This figure of 3.3077 is surely not a universal constant. It may vary, I think it will vary, from planetary body to planetary body. My private opinion is that it is bound to be connected with solar activity in some way. If that is so, then we may find that the men returning from Venus will be perceiving on a continuum slightly arrears of Earth time." He stood up suddenly, looking dismayed, the absorption gone from his face. "That's a point that hadn't occurred to me," Stackpole said, making a note. "If the expedition to Venus is primed with these points beforehand, we should have no trouble about organizing their return. Ultimately, this confusion will be sorted out, and I've no doubt that it will eventually vastly enrich the culture of mankind." "It's awful! You're all crazy!" Janet exclaimed. She jumped up and hurried off towards the house. "Or then again..." Jack began to move after her towards the house. By his watch, which showed Earth time, it was 11:18 and 12 seconds. He thought, not for the first time, that he would invest in another watch, which would be strapped to his right wrist and show Martian time. No, the one on his left wrist should show Martian time, for that was the wrist he principally consulted, and the time by which he lived, even when going through the business of communicating with the earthbound human race. He realized he was now moving ahead of Janet by her reckoning. It would be interesting to have someone ahead of him in perception. Then he would wish to converse, would want to go through the labor of it, although it would rob him of the sensation that he was perpetually first in the universe, first everywhere, with everything dewy in that strange light. Mars light. He'd call it that, till he had it classified, the romantic vision preceding the scientific. Or then again, suppose they were wrong in their theories, and the perceptual effect was some freak of the long space journey itself. Supposing time were quantal. Supposing all time were quantal. After all, aging was a matter of steps, not a smooth progress for much of the inorganic world as for the organic. Now he was standing quite still on the lawn. The glaze was coming through the grass, making it look brittle, almost tinging each blade with a tiny spectrum of light. If his perceptual time were further ahead than it was now, would the Mars light be stronger, the Earth more translucent? How beautiful it would look! After a longer star journey, one would return to a cobweb of a world. Hungrily, he visualized it, but they needed more knowledge. Suddenly, he thought, "If I could get on the Venus expedition, if the Institute's right, I'd be perhaps six, say five and a half, no, one can't say, but I'd be ahead of Venerian time. I must go." He stood looking at the ground and through it, to the stony veils of Mars and the unguessable landscapes of Venus. Janet consented to a ride into town with Stackpole. He was collecting his cricket boots, which had been restudded. She thought she might buy a roll of film for her camera. The children would like photos of her and Daddy together. Standing together. As the car ran beside trees, their shadow flickered red and green before her vision. "I have an awful feeling you now understand my husband better than I do," she said. He did not deny it.
"Why do you feel that?"
"I believe he does not mind the terrible isolation he must be experiencing."
"He's a brave man."
Westermarck had been home a week now. Janet saw that each day they were more removed from each other, as he spoke less and stood frequently as still as a statue, gazing at the ground raptly. She thought of something she had once been afraid to utter aloud to her mother-in-law. But with Clem Stackpole, she was safer. "You know why we managed to exist in comparative harmony," she said. He was slowing the car, half looking at her. We only manage to exist by banishing all events from our lives. All children, all seasons. Otherwise, we'd be faced at every moment with the knowledge of how much at odds we really are. Catching the note in her voice, Stackpole said soothingly, "You are every bit as brave as he is, Janet." "Damn being brave! We've already interfered with time too much. All of us, I mean. Time is a European invention. Goodness knows how mixed up in it we are going to get if... well, if this goes on." She was irritated by the lack of her usual coherence. As Stackpole spoke next, he was pulling the car into a lay-by, stopping it by overhanging bushes. He turned to her, smiling tolerantly. "Time was God's invention, if you believe in God, as I prefer to do. We observe it, tame it, exploit it where possible." "Exploit it? You mustn't think of the future as if we were all wading knee-deep in treacle or something." He laughed briefly, resting his hands on the steering wheel. "What lovely weather it is. I was wondering, on Sunday I'm playing cricket over in the village. Would you like to come and watch the match? And perhaps we could have tea somewhere afterwards." All events, all children, all seasons. She had a letter next morning from Jane, her 5-year-old daughter, and it made her think. All the letter said was, "Dear Mummy, thank you for the dollies, with love from Jane." But Janet knew the labour that had gone into the inch-high letters. How long could she bear to leave the children away from their home and her care? As soon as the thought emerged, she recalled that during the previous evening she had told herself nebulously that if there was to be anything with Stackpole, it was as well the children would be out of the way, purely, she now realised, for her convenience and for Stackpole's. She had not thought then about the children. She had thought about Stackpole, who, despite the unexpected delicacy he had shown, was not a man she cared for. "And another intolerably immoral thought," she muttered unhappily to the empty room. "What alternative have I to Stackpole?" She knew Westermarck was in his study. She knew he was sinking deeper into isolation. She longed to help. She feared to sacrifice herself to that isolation, longed to stay outside it, in life. Dropping the letter, she held her head in her hands, closing her eyes, as in the curved bone of her skull she heard all her possible courses of action jar together, further lifelines that annihilated each other. As Janet stood transfixed, Westermark's mother came into the room. "I was looking for you," she said. They stood there, staring at each other, until the older woman said awkwardly, "I was going to tell you, Janet, that I thought perhaps it would be better if the children didn't come back here while things are as they are. If you want to go and see them and stay with them at your parents' house, I can look after Jack and Mr. Stackpole for a week. I don't think Jack wants to see them." "That's very kind, Mother, I'll see. I promised Clem... well, I told Mr. Stackpole that perhaps I'd go and watch him play cricket tomorrow afternoon. It's not important, of course, but I did say... anyhow, I might drive over to see the children on Monday, if you could hold the fort. You've still plenty of time if you feel like going today. I'm sure Mr. Stackpole will understand." "I prefer to leave it till Monday," Janet said, a little distantly, for she suspected now the motive behind her mother-in-law's suggestion. Where the Scientific American did not reach. Jack Westermarck put down the Scientific American and stared at the tabletop. With his right hand, he felt the beat of his heart. In the magazine was an article about him. This thoughtful article was far removed from the sensational pieces that had appeared elsewhere, the shallow things that referred to him as the man who has done more than Einstein to wreck our cosmic picture. And for that very reason it was the more startling, and presented some aspects of the matter that Westermarck himself had not considered. As he thought over its conclusions, he rested from the effort of reading terrestrial books, and Stackpole sat by the fire, smoking a cigar and waiting to take Westermark's dictation. Even reading a magazine represented a feat in space-time, a collaboration,
A conspiracy. Stackpole turned the pages at timed intervals. Westermark read when they lay flat. He was unable to turn them when, in their own narrow continuum, they were not being turned. To his fingers, they lay under the jelly-like glaze, that visual hallucination that represented an unconquerable cosmic inertia. The inertia gave a special shine to the surface of the table as he stared into it and probed into his own mind to determine the truths of the Scientific American article. The writer of the article began by considering the facts and observing that they tended to point towards the existence of local times through the universe, and that if this were so, a new explanation might be forthcoming for the recession of the galaxies, and different estimates arrived at for the age of the universe, and of course, for its complexity. He then proceeded to deal with the problem that vexed other writers on the subject. Namely, why, if Westermark lost Earth time on Mars, he had not reciprocally lost Mars time back on Earth. This, more than anything, pointed to the fact that local times were not purely mechanistic, but to some extent at least, a psychobiological function. Impatiently, Westermark thrust his mind forward to imagine the day when Earth harbored many local times, gleaned from voyages across the vacancies of space. Those vacancies lay across time too, and that little understood concept, MacTaggart had denied its external reality, hadn't he, would come to lie within the grasp of man's understanding. Wasn't that the ultimate secret? To be able to understand the flux in which existence is staged, as a dream is staged in the primitive reaches of the mind. But, would not that day bring the annihilation of Earth's local time? That was what he had started. It could only mean that local time was not a product of planetary elements. There, the writer of the Scientific American article had not dared to go far enough. Local time was entirely a product of the psyche. That dark innermost thing that could keep accurate time even while a man lay unconscious was a mere provincial. But it could be educated to be a citizen of the universe. He saw that he was the first of a new race, unimaginable in the wildest mind a few months previously. He was independent of the enemy that, more than death, managed contemporary man. Time. Locked within him was an entirely new potential. Superman had arrived. Painfully, Superman stirred in his seat. He sat so wrapped for so long that his limbs grew stiff and dead without his noticing it. "Dictation," he said, and waited impatiently until the command had penetrated backwards to the limbo by the fire where Stackpole sat. What he had to say was so terribly important, yet it had to wait on these people. As was his custom, he rose and began to walk round the table, speaking in phrases quickly delivered. This was to be the testament to the new way of life. "Consciousness is not expendable but concurrent. There may have been many time nodes at the beginning of the human race. The mentally deranged often revert to different time rates. For some, a day seems to stretch forever. We know by experience that for children, time is seen in the convex mirror of consciousness, enlarged and distorted beyond its focal point." He was momentarily irritated by the scared face of his wife appearing outside the study window, but he brushed it away and continued, "Its focal point. Yet man, in his ignorance, has persisted in pretending time was some sort of unidirectional flow, and homogeneous at that, despite the evidence to the contrary. Our conception of ourselves, no, this erroneous conception, has become a basic life assumption." Daughters of Daughters. Westermark's mother was not given to metaphysical speculation. But as she was leaving the room, she turned and said to her daughter-in-law, "You know what I sometimes think? Jack is so strange. I wonder at nights if men and women aren't getting more and more apart in thought and their ways with every generation. My generation made a great attempt to bring the two sexes together, inequality and all the rest. but it seems to have come to nothing. Jack will get better. Janet could hear the lack of confidence in her voice. I thought the same thing. About men and women getting wider apart, I mean. When my husband was killed. Suddenly, all Janet's sympathy was gone. She had recognized a familiar topic drifting onto the scene, knew well the careful tone that ironed away all self-pity as her mother-in-law said, Bob was dedicated to speed, you know. That was what killed him, really. Not the fool backing into the road in front of him. No blame was attached to your husband, Janet said. You see the connection, though. This progress thing. Bob so crazy to get round the next bend first, and now Jack. Oh, well, there's nothing a woman can do. She closed the door behind her. Absently, Janet picked up the message from the next generation of women. Thank you for the dollies. He was their father. Perhaps Jane and Peter should come back, despite the risks involved. Anxiously, Janet stood there, moving herself with a sudden resolve to tackle Jack straight away. He was so irritable, so unapproachable, but at least she could observe how busy he was before interrupting him. As she slipped into the side hall and made for the back door, she heard her mother-in-law call her. Just a minute, she answered. The sun had broken through, sucking moisture from the damp garden. It was now unmistakably autumn. She rounded the corner of the house, stepped round the rose bed, and looked into her husband's study. Shaken, she saw he leaned half over the table. His hands were over his face, blood ran between his fingers and dripped onto an open magazine on the tabletop. She was aware of Stackpole sitting indifferently beside the electric fire. She gave a small cry and ran round the house again, to be met at the back door by Mrs. Westermark. Oh, I was just... Janet, what is it? Jack, mother, he's had a stroke or something terrible. But how do you know? Quick, we must phone the hospital. I must go to him. Mrs. Westermark took Janet's arm. Perhaps we'd better leave it to Mr. Stackpole, hadn't we? I'm afraid... Mother, we must do what we can. Please let me go. No, Janet, it's their world. I'm frightened. They'll come if they want us. Their wild eyes stared momentarily at each other, as if seeing something else, and then Janet snatched herself away. I must go to him, she said. She hurried down the hall and pushed open the study door. Her husband stood now at the far end of the room by the window, while blood streamed from his nose. Jack! She exclaimed. As she ran towards him, a blow from the empty air struck her on the forehead, so that she staggered aside, falling against a bookcase. Exclaiming, Stackpole dropped his notebook and ran round the table to her. Even as he went to her aid, he noted the time from his watch. 10:24. Westermark's mother appeared in the doorway. Stay where you are! Stackpole shouted, or there will be more trouble. Jack, I'm right with you. God knows what you felt, isolated without aid for 3 1/3 minutes. Angrily, he went across and stood within arm's length of his patient. He threw his handkerchief down on the table. Mr. Stackpole, Westermark's mother said tentatively from the door, an arm round Janet's waist. He looked back over his shoulder, only long enough to say, Get towels! Phone the research hospital for an ambulance, and tell them to be here right away. By midday, Westermark was tidily in bed upstairs, and the ambulance staff, who had treated him for what after all was only a nosebleed, had left. Stackpole, as he turned from closing the front door, eyed the two women. I feel it's my duty to warn you, he said heavily, that another incident such as this might well prove fatal. This time we escaped very lightly. If anything else of this sort happens, I shall feel obliged to recommend to the board that Mr. Westermark is moved back to the hospital. Current way to define accidents. He wouldn't want to go, Janet said. Besides, you're being absurd. It was entirely an accident. May I point out that what happened was not an accident, or not as we generally define accidents, since you saw the results of your interference through the study window before you entered. But that's absurd. I never would have rushed into the room as I did had I not seen through the window that he was in trouble. What you saw was the result on your husband of your later interference. In something like a wail, Westermark's mother said, I don't understand any of this. What did Janet bump into when she ran in? She ran, Mrs. Westermark, into the spot where her husband had been standing 3.3077 minutes earlier. Surely by now you have grasped this elementary business of time inertia. We had better go into the living room. Speaking for myself, I would like a drink. He helped himself, and not until his hand was round a glass of whiskey did he say, Now, not wishing to lecture to you, ladies, I think it is high time you both realize that you are not living in the old safe world of classical mechanics, ruled over by a god invented by 18th century enlightenment. All that has happened here is perfectly rational, but if you are going to pretend it is beyond your understandings. Mr. Stackpole, Janet said sharply, can you please keep to the point without being insulting? Will you tell me why what happened was not an accident? I understand now that when I looked through the study window, I saw my husband suffering from a collision that to him had happened 3 and something minutes before, and to me would not happen for another 3 and something minutes. But at that moment, I was so startled that I forgot. No, no, your figures are wrong. That total time lapse is only 3.3077 minutes. When you saw your husband, he had been hit half that time, 1.65385 minutes ago, and there was another 1.6538 minutes to go before you completed the action by bursting into the room and striking him. But she didn't strike him, the older woman cried. Firmly, Stackpole replied, She struck him at 10:24 Earth time, which equals 10:20 plus about 36 seconds Mars, or his time, which equals 9:59 or whatever Neptune time, which equals 1:56 and a half Sirius time. It's a big universe, Mrs. Westermark. You will remain confused as long as you continue to confuse event with time. Leaving aside the figures, Janet said, returning to the attack. How can you say that what happened was no accident? You are not claiming I injured my husband deliberately, I hope. What you say suggests that I was powerless from the moment I saw him through the window. Leaving aside the figures, he quoted, that's where your responsibility lies. What you saw through the window was the result of your act. It was by then inevitable that you should complete it, for it had already been completed. Through the window, the drafts of time blow. I can't understand. She clutched her forehead, gratefully accepting a cigarette from her mother-in-law, whilst shrugging off her consolatory. Don't try to understand, dear. Supposing when I had seen Jack's nose bleeding, I had looked at my watch and thought, it's 10:20 or whenever it was, and he may be suffering from my interference, so I better not go in, and I hadn't gone in. Would his nose miraculously have healed? Of course not. You take such a mechanistic view of the universe. Cultivate a mental approach. You could not think what you suggest because that is not in your nature. Just as it is not in your nature to consult your watch intelligently, just as you always leave aside the figures, as you say. No, I'm not being personal. What I'm saying is that if before you looked into the window, you had been able to think, however I see my husband now, I must recall he has the additional experience of the next 3.3077 minutes. Then you could have looked in and seen him unharmed, and you would not have come bursting in as you did. She drew on her cigarette, baffled and hurt. You're saying that I'm a danger to my own husband. You're saying that. God, how I hate men, she exclaimed. You're so bloody logical, so bloody smug. He finished his whiskey and set the glass down on a table beside her so that he leant close. You're upset just now, he said. Of course I'm upset. What do you think? She fought a desire to cry or slap his face. She turned to Jack's mother, who gently took her wrist and said, Why don't you go off straight away and stay with the children for the weekend, darling? Come back when you feel like it. Jack will be all right and I can look after him. As much as he wants looking after. Janet glanced about the room. I will, They'll be glad to see me. As she passed Stackpole on the way out, she said bitterly, At least they won't be worrying about the local time on Sirius. They may, said Stackpole, imperturbably from the middle of the room. Have to, one day. All events, all children, all seasons.